I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, it's John from All Stats, Aren't We? Given it's nearly Christmas, we wanted to give you a taster of what we're offering over on our Patreon channel at the moment. The following episode is half of this week's preview podcast, which goes out only to our patrons every week. Before we get to that, though, just a reminder that we produce a bonus episode every week that goes out exclusively to our patrons. That could be an under-23s episode, an interview with an industry expert, an Authors List episode where we scout Europe for fun young players, or a Q&A episode where we tackle the topics that you guys send us in. If that sounds interesting, then you can sign up for all our audio content for £2.50 a month. That'll get you all the preview episodes for the month, all of our weekly bonus podcasts for the month, and access to all of our audio content from the last 2 years. If that sounds good, then head over to www.patreon.com/allstatsaren'twe and check out our subscription tiers. Now over to the first half of our Brighton and Palace preview pod.
Hello and welcome to the All Stats Aren't We preview of the Brighton away and Palace home games. I'm Darren Driver and I'm joined today by the lonesome, lonely and on his own, John McKenzie. John, how you doing?
No need to rub in my marital status to me, Darren, in the intro. But yeah, I'm doing right. Looking forward to the next few games before the hellscape of December descends upon us. So yeah, I think these games coming up are interesting. This run of Brighton and Palace and Brentford, I think we'll learn a lot about where Leeds are at from these three games.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I've seen a lot of people on Twitter or wherever kind of saying that they expect Leeds to get 6 or 9 points from these games without kind of necessarily taking into account how we've been doing this season and the fact that Brighton and Palace are both in the top half and that Brentford probably are tactically a team who will cause us some problems as well. So I think it's important that as a fan base we don't slip into assumptions that we are going to definitely win a lot of points in these three games.
Yeah, I mean, Palace have lost twice this season to Liverpool and Chelsea. The idea that 17th placed Leeds United are suddenly just going to turn up and cause them a huge amount of problems is I think, yeah, a little bit optimistic. But that's not to say that I don't think that with Leeds that we aren't so much of an outlier that we can cause teams problems who have been doing well. And I think the lesson that we should take away from last season is that it was the teams that we least expected to do well against a lot of the time that we did well against, and teams that we didn't expect to do well against who caused us problems. Now, the problem is that the first team we're going to talk about is Brighton, and they were one of the teams that we didn't think would cause us problems, and they did. So I don't know where that puts us, really. But yeah, there's definitely a lot to take into account looking at these fixtures, for sure.
Yeah, and definitely be worth saying that due to our December run being so kind of crazy and facing a lot of the top teams, although, you know, I'm not assuming that we will take points from any of these next three games, I think it's important that we do at the same time so that we don't end up starting January in the bottom three, which is a distinct possibility at the moment, I think, which I'm saddened to say.
Yeah, I think we'll maybe pick up one win from this run and then maybe draws or losses in the other two. I don't know. Like, I think that's what you have to sort of be expecting. It is tempting to go in thinking, oh, you know, we could win all three. And I think that's definitely true. But I think on the basis of the way that we've been playing this season, we haven't been able to beat teams. The only teams we've beaten have been Watford and Norwich, both of whom are not good teams. So it's a sort of combination between sort of thinking, yeah, okay, we're playing teams that aren't great, and then thinking, well, yeah, we're really not necessarily in top form at the moment as well. So I think maybe four points will be what I would be expecting from this run. But I do think we have the possibility to come out with 6 or even 9 points. But I just think it's all about possibilities, isn't it? You've got to weigh up, like, what's the probability of us doing that? And I think that the probability that we could win all three exists, but I think it's much smaller than maybe the fact that we won't. So that's just the way that I'm looking at it. I know it's a bit miserable, but there's just so many factors to play into at the moment, which we will get into, no doubt.
Sure. One of the factors which has been playing into our season so far, and I think we'd all agree that this has been a real problem for us, has been the absence of Patrick Bamford. And I was gladdened yesterday to see him doing some gentle training on the grass, as the pros say. So I'm hoping that we might get to see Bamford a little bit, maybe towards the end of this run. John, what do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to say, really. And I don't really like speculating on injuries, because, you know, the club does have a tendency to be over positive on the likely return of players when they're on the return track. I've heard rumours that he's hoping to be on the bench against Brighton, but if not, definitely against Palace. But again, that is just a rumor. It is from a source that I have heard be correct in the past. But I just think he's been out for so long that he'll have to have some sort of under 23s exposure to maybe get up to speed. Although it could be the case that because we need him so badly that we just sort of fast track that a little bit. But from what I've been hearing, he's had a grade one ankle ligament injury, so he sprained his ankle by the sounds of it. And I think the usual return for that is sort of 3 to 4 weeks, and obviously it's been longer than that. But as someone who's had grade one ankle ligament injuries most of my footballing playing days, I can confirm that they are. It is just random. Sometimes you can get them and they clear up much quicker than other times. I've been out for 3 months with ankle ligament issues, and then I've been out for 3 weeks with ankle ligament issues. So I suspect he's probably coming towards the end of it now. And the question is just how much latent fitness he still has from before, and how long it will take him to get back up to match fitness. So yeah, I'd be expecting him to be on the bench and maybe come off for a few fixtures. But yeah, certainly by Brentford, I think we may be seeing him in and around the team.
Okay, let's start to think then a little bit about the Brighton game. The way we're going to structure this episode is that we're going to build it around the two interviews that you've done with fans of those other clubs. We'll start by listening to you talk to Liam Tharn of Albion Analytics about them tracking their XG, about being more possession-based, and about Brighton's recent poorer run.
So, Liam, hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, yeah. Nice to be on.
Yeah, good stuff. It's been an interesting season so far for Brighton, whereas last season you underperformed your expected goals wildly. This season you've decided to match your expected goals roughly, and it's got you comfortably in the top half. So what happened over the course of the summer?
I wish I knew. If I did know, I'm sure I could make a lot of money selling that model to sort of other clubs. In all honesty, more a case, and it's something that I've sort of written about at the moment and looking to dive into, is we've sort of come off the back of some poorer form, sort of winless in our last six, admittedly four draws, so not sort of the end of the world, but we've had some games where, you know, we've not been as good going forward, not been as good sort of in both boxes. And I think I put it down to the variety that we offered in the first six games in the attacking threat, that I think we scored maybe 8 goals in those first six games, but a real variety. We had both Danny Welbeck and Shane Duffy scored headers from a corner. We had sort of a counter-attack goal at Burnley where we broke from our own box and broke quickly. And we also had a goal from sort of a high possession sequence at Burnley. We had a couple of brilliant individual finishes from Leandro Trossard and Neil Mapai at Brentford and Crystal Palace respectively. And on top of that, we had a penalty as well. So I think there was sort of, you know, some, you know, real variety to our goal scoring. And from what I've looked at now, sort of the rate at which, if we use sort of StatsBomb FBref data, that, you know, live passes are accounting for sort of our shot creating actions, it was about 2/3 in the first six games. It's now up to almost 80%. So in terms of how we're at least creating shots, obviously, and need to create shots to score goals, it's become a lot more sort of possession based stuff. And I think sometimes, you know, when that happens, we end up sort of having to go around the sides of teams a lot. And I think crossing fundamentally is a lot harder. And I think we don't always have the players in the positions or the box superiority to score goals in those situations.
You mentioned already that despite the good start, you've been winless in, I think it's 8 games now with quite a lot of draws. I think it's 6 of those 8. It seems as though there's been some unlucky draws and there's been some lucky draws as well. So I'm sure you're not too worried, but how important is it for you to get another win on the board as soon as possible?
To give Pretty Football Manager's answer, it's always important to win a game, isn't it? I suppose, you know, teams like, dare I say, sort of Brighton, Leeds, that perhaps want to be higher than, you know, particularly where you guys are at the moment and where we were sort of for last season. You know, especially when it's teams around you that you, or teams that you think are capable of beating, especially home games. It's probably very cliche, but I imagine it's the manager's target. And you need to get the results around teams around you, because otherwise that just will sort of anchor you, and it did for us for sort of most of last season. And I think especially, as you mentioned, we've had sort of a balance of games where, you know, you go and you draw at Anfield. We, you know, kept a good clean sheet at the end of Norwich. And it's been quite a mixed bag. I think that's why it's maybe quite hard to judge. For sort of me in particular, where I'm like, we're kind of disappointed, kind of not, and you're not quite sure where to put it. So yeah, I think a lot of fears would be eased if we do go on and get a good result.
So what are your expectations for the rest of the season? Where would you want to see Brighton finishing?
That's a really tough question to answer. As I've said sort of at the start of the season, anything that's a progression on 41 points, which is our sort of Premier League record, for me is fantastic. Wherever that puts us would be where it puts us. I'd be surprised if that's the bottom three. I think survival is always going to need to be our number one aim to start with. And once we achieve that, you know, we can have a list of goals to tick off. So for me, might sound a bit pessimistic and negative, but I think things right now are showing that you might have a good start, but it can be a long season. So for me, yeah, hit 42 points plus. Set a record and we can go from there.
Let's talk a little bit about the players that you brought in over the summer. How are you feeling about the influx that you had over the summer? You've had a fairly decent chance of seeing them play now, so who's stood out in particular?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Obviously, we sold Ben White for quite a sizable fee, someone who obviously won't need to talk to you guys too much about, and sort of just similar to what Spurs, I guess, I did with Baird a long time ago, sort of spun him into a few different players, and we sort of bought a couple of players for now. So we brought in Enoch Nwepu, who has played sort of centrally, really, really good sort of runner beyond the ball, scored his first goal, first league goal at Anfield, sort of same week he scored in the cup. So really exciting sort of attacking forward threat, potentially the sort of player that we need in terms of one of those runners beyond the ball. And we don't have sort of too many of those that are particularly high quality. And Mark Cupinero, of course, as well, is sort of another player that we've bought in for now. There's been a couple in Adler Sima and Kauri Mitoma as well, who we've sort of bought in and are out on loan at different clubs. So sort of use Ben White to, you know, spun him into a couple of players for now, a couple for the future. And Mark Cupinero has been absolutely fantastic. You know, we've been sort of lacking another quality left-sided player who's sort of naturally left-footed, really sort of give you that width. He provides an immense balance of defensive ability, both sort of in terms of pressing, so stuff that actually isn't interacting directly sort of with the ball, but is sort of, yeah, his ability to defend in a block. Recovery running speed is excellent, and I guess it needs to be because he likes to play so high. And I think he just really facilitates a lot of other players to be good. We've got a really good ball striker in Rob Sanchez in goal, and sort of his ability now that he's sort of played sort of longer, riskier passes to sort of take out opposition and create chances. And Kukulea is the sort of player you need there, because it's all well and good, I guess, having the passer, but you need a player who can control it, who can receive, who can, you know, then take that ball forwards. His ability to sort of combine in the attacking third is fantastic. He can play left foot, right foot. You know, he's a really good passer of the ball, very good crosser as well. So yeah, his just all-round game is fantastic. And still, in fairness, I think he's still 23, 24. Still a very young player, sort of, all things considered. So yeah, he's been a really excellent signing.
Leeds fans by now know what to expect from Graham Potter. At least in the last few games we faced, you've played smart mid-to-high, mid-block pressing and fairly direct build-up play. Has much changed tactically for you this season?
I suppose at times we've perhaps been a bit more deep block in games where we've needed to sort of earlier on in the season. But no, I think sort of the underpinning principle of that has always sort of remained. I think maybe our press has dropped off recently, just down to some of the quality opposition that we face sort of when we played Liverpool, played City, that sometimes, you know, you can't go into those games sort of pressing us ridiculously. And at the same time, I think we've played some teams, maybe Newcastle, who aren't going to always build from the back, so you can't obviously press if the team's just going to kick it long every time. So it'll be interesting to see sort of how our shape sets up out of possession, particularly for sort of goal kicks and bits and pieces, when we do get that organised opportunity to press. And what the sort of interesting thing is at the moment, that Neil Applies had a few games out, and this isn't sort of suspension or injury, it just seems to be tactical, and Potter have been using sort of like a false nine setup, really, with sort of Leo Trossard. And sort of the most advanced player. At Anfield, we had the likes of Sonny March, Enoch Mwepu, Adam Lallana sort of all making runs in behind off the back of that. And it was similar sort of against City. And those two games, or the game and a half, we did it really in the second half against City. That sort of, you know, 130 odd minutes worked fantastically. We've sort of tried it since and it's worked a sort of mixed effect. So I'm sort of really intrigued to see whether he'll stick with that. I imagine he'll probably bring Mapai back in. For this sort of game, I think with how sort of man-to-man you go, you can use Mapai quite well to sort of drop in, to disjoint that back line, to hope we create some space in behind.
Yeah, well, we've seen you adopt a 3-4-3 formation both times we faced you in the Premier League, and obviously that's worked to good effect. So do you expect Potter to stick with this, given that you beat us both times in that formation?
I'd be interested to see what the shape looks like when it sort of actually comes out, where he sort of, because obviously we're quite a wide area heavy side at times. I know Leeds can be as well, so I'm intrigued to see whether, because I sort of remember back last season when we played you in the away game, I know that the pitch was quite terrible. It's probably a game that most of you sort of erased out of your minds, but I think we were quite central in that. You know, we had very little of the ball. When we did get it, there were a lot of ball carries, it was a lot of early play, lots of vertical play. And then sort of in the reverse fixture, when we played you at home, I think our game ended up being a bit different because we sort of took the lead fairly early on. But then from that, I do remember us being sort of a lot more organised possession. So it's difficult to know. I think he can be a very situational manager, very much managers and coaches sort of depending on the context. So just see what the shape looks like, to be fair.
Just looking through the games that you've played this season, FB Ref has you down as using five different starting formations. And obviously you need to take those sorts of assessments of formations with a pinch of salt, but you're clearly mixing things up a bit. Do you think this is because Potter is looking for a better structure, or are the teams just flexible because of his coaching? Is it simply the fact that he has the confidence in moving his team around to be able to match up with oppositions?
The answer is probably a bit of both, in all honesty. I think he's the sort of manager that will always be looking for where he can make tweaks, where he can make improvements. We tried sort of a split striking system last season where we pushed, you know, Danny Welbeck and Neil Mapai into really wide areas and had sort of runners coming from the midfield. So I think he's continued trying that. And of course, that will be opposition dependent. You know, he's probably looking for marginal ways to find solutions for the problems that opposition sort of defences present. But likewise, I think he's a coach that's going to demand a hell of a lot. And it seems to be a blessing and simultaneously a curse sometimes for us that we are so flexible and are so fluid. And sometimes you think, you know, would we be more beneficial to sort of lock down the system and be able to continuously play sort of in a way that we know that we can make dangerous? And it's a real trade-off. So, yeah, I'm interested to see. Obviously, we had a few different sort of setups this season so far. Come sort of Saturday, will that be sort of another one to add to it, or will he sort of rejig something from earlier on this season?
You mentioned Leandro Trossard has had a good season so far and come into his own a little bit. What have you made of him?
He's been fantastic going forward. He's been sort of in a more shots-based role in terms of sort of his output than he ever has been. A lot more sort of an advanced player, and probably for me our best ball striker in the team. Probably quite a good ball striker from some positions that aren't always sort of the most fantastic either. He's very good sort of on the edge of the area. I know obviously you guys would have seen a fair few outside the box goals go in, but really good on both feet, good from some sort of tight angles, and a really good sort of striker on the dribble as well. So interested to see if we still sort of keep him as the focal point up top. I've often felt that maybe he's better when he's got someone like Mapai to create space for him. So he's been fantastic in that regard, and his sort of output in terms of shots and touching the opposition box, you know, lots of different things are way up there. So this is his third Premier League season now, and he's hitting some of his highest numbers ever. So he's constantly returning goals, and he took a pen for the first time as well a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, he's really involved in the attacking side of things.
And Tarek Lamptey's back, which I think will be a boon to you. How important do you think that is going to be in the long run?
I think he's fantastically important. I think he's a real sort of pick lock against sort of deep line defences. That there's not many, I don't think there's anyone at Brighton like it. And I don't think there's many players in sort of the Premier League that are like it, that have just got that pace and the agility. But also obviously the awareness and the vision on the pitch to see the moments and see the spaces that, you know, you can exploit opposition defences, and teams often do sit back against us. And I think he's the exact sort of thing you need that, you know, can win you a foul high up, can drive inside a back line, will get you yards. He's very similar to sort of Mark Cucurella, but just on the right hand side. So it's interesting to see now as he sort of comes back in more. We've often played either sort of with Lamptey and March. It was last season, with March being sort of quite attacking minded, but maybe not as advanced as Lamptey. And then this season it's been a lot of Cucurella and sort of Veltman. and a mix of players out on that right-hand side. And it's always been a bit lopsided. So I'm interested to see when we do sort of have two very advanced wing-backs, at least in terms of profile, what the shape looks like if we are sort of both quite gung-ho with both of them, or whether sort of we play a bit more lopsided, it's a bit more fluid. I think it'd be interesting to see.
You mentioned in the transfer section Enoch Mwepu, who was brought in from RB Salzburg, and obviously the Red Bull system is an exciting system for player development. So you've not had a huge amount of minutes to watch him so far, but what have you made of him?
He's just really good fun sort of going forward, in all honesty. I don't think we've got a midfielder that profiles like him. Sort of my assessment of him really is that everything that he seems to do is you know, he plays with the game in front of him, so he's not really a player that often receives back to goal. He's a really good presser defensively on the front foot. He's got quite long legs, so he seems to be able to tackle from some ridiculous distances away from the ball. And as you mentioned, yeah, he has had quite limited minutes. I think he was isolating 1 point due to COVID. But with the way that obviously, you know, Potter likes to bring in players, it's not always bring in and permanently stays there. Players, you know, drip fed in. Sometimes they have a spell out on the side. He played at Burnley on the opening day and was in a setup that I'm not quite sure what it tried, but it went quite clamorously wrong in the first half, and he got then hooked at half time and things changed. But since he's come back in, he's been fantastic, really sort of involved in that penalty area. And again, there's a sort of mentioning that, you know, a necessity for us to have sort of more players contributing in that sort of attacking phase and those late runners. He really ticks the bill in that regard.
How are you feeling about facing Leeds this season? Because it obviously feels as though our fortunes have changed in sort of inverse correlation to last season. Obviously, we're not quite underperforming to the extent that you were last season, but we're down at the bottom. And it feels to me maybe that we're at least quality-wise a little bit better than where we are. So how are you feeling about facing Leeds this season?
There's always a slight of confidence, I think, for us, because we often seem to do quite well against Leeds, particularly at home. But I think it's a challenge for us to face a team who do like to press so much, particularly a team that are going to be around us. That I think stylistically, what people would say about both Brighton and Leeds are both play a lot more like sides probably in slash around the top six than the bottom six, which obviously isn't necessarily a good or bad thing, but. It's interesting for us to face a side that are probably more similar to us than most teams that we play. And I think that will present a really difficult challenge, probably quite a nice one for Potter and coaching staff, etc. And it's difficult because I always feel like, and I think every football fan ever would say this, but, you know, we perform sometimes against some of the top teams, but we'll face a struggling team around us and we just don't often seem to win those games. So I think these are the right sort of tests that we need to really sort of give an indication of improvement and sort of true quality of, okay, you can go to Anfield and you can scrap a point. And, you know, when sometimes you're in a bit of a winless rut, how can you get out of that?
In terms of the logistics of the game, do you have any injuries or suspensions ahead of the game?
So Rob Sanchez is back. He had a one-game suspension for a red card against Newcastle. Injuries off the top of my head, Danny Welbeck is still out injured. I think Dan Byrne might also be out injured. Besides that, nothing that comes to my mind. Alan Webb's has recently come back from injury as well. So Tariq Lamptey, I think, sort of seems to almost be back on the verge of a full 90. That might well come this Saturday. So I think we're sort of close now, pushing towards as full fitness as we can be sort of right now.
Would you like to hazard a guess at the lineup on Saturday?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question. In all honesty, it's been quite stable in terms of defensively this season. It's looked like Sanchez, Dunk, Webster, Duffy. And it's been great to see Shane Duffy back. Not necessarily say doing what he always has been doing in terms of just box defending, because he's been a bit more involved going forwards as well now. But great to see someone, you know, be able to pick up their career again after having sort of a really tough time. So that will be sort of your sort of first phase of build-up players. You'll probably have Cucurella and Lamptey as the widest players, those sort of wing-back roles. The pivot can, you know, that is always an interesting one, because it's normally sort of two or three out of Ibasuma, Pascal Gross, Adam Lallana, Enoch Mwepu, Jakub Moda, and how those sort of shape and work in those roles is quite interesting. So I think at Liverpool, we sort of had a three for the most part in the first half, and that then really facilitated the likes of Mwepu and Lallana going in behind. So whether we sort of try an approach where we, you know, try to dominate the midfield, I'm not sure. And then sort of going forward, it'll be anything out of really Trossard and Mapai, potentially some supporting cast up there as well. So interested to see. I would try and guess it, but I think there's very little chance of me getting it right. So I don't want to waste anyone's time.
Yeah, and you've done this podcast before, so you know that I don't ask for predictions. What I'm interested in is where you expect the game to be won or lost. So do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, our game management recently has dipped down a bit. We were quite good at the start of the season in terms of coming back in games, in terms of holding on when we were leading. And I think sometimes for us, at least from my perspective, is a necessity to be uglier. I'm not sure if you or any of the people listening have seen the goals against Villa at the weekend, but the first one for me was and whether people think it's right or wrong, it's just screaming out for a foul on the counters as we broke. If you know, if you can lose the ball in the opposition half, in their box even, there's absolutely no way that ball should end up in your box. And likewise against Newcastle, you know, didn't concede much all game, but did concede a good chance from a set piece, and just not doing the fundamentals of, you know, getting out, blocking across, winning the first contact, blocking a shot, etc. So I think, yeah, just needing to be harder to beat sometimes is important. So in terms of winning or losing it, I think set pieces always seem to present a challenge with Brighton and Leeds, and that could be really interesting. But I think maybe the press as well, in seeing how we sort of set up and how much we look to sort of push that back line, and sort of seeing how both teams react based on where the first goal comes in the game, because I'm always assuming when our teams are involved that there's going to be at least one goal.
Well, Liam, it's always a great pleasure to have a chat with you about all things Brighton. So what's the best way for our listeners to catch what you're putting out?
Come and join us over on Twitter, at Albion Analytics. Lots of Brighton-related stuff, lots of stats and bits and pieces over there. So yeah, come and join us over there.
Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, John, Brighton, give me the fear. Did they give you the fear?
Yeah, they do. Although I actually think that of the two fixtures that we're going to talk about today, I'm maybe a little bit more positive about Brighton, insofar as I think, yes, they caused us huge amounts of problems the last two times we faced them. But I do also feel as though when it comes to Brighton, the way that they're going to play is going to be quite attritional. So it will very much come down to, can we grab a goal at any point? And I think if Rafinha's on fire, we could do that. Whereas I feel as though with Palace, they might just be a little bit more, that might just have a little bit more in the way of talent on the field, which could cause us problems. Just thinking back to the last couple of Brighton fixtures, it's sort of been 1-0 games, which became a 2-0 in the second one because of, I guess, we sort of got game stated a little bit. But I do feel as though with Brighton, it's very much down to will they score on the day. We've talked about their finishing problems for the last few seasons, and yes, they do seem to have sorted that out a little bit. They've done a few things. They've tweaked a few things. They play a few more formations. But the long and short of it will come down to, even if they do control the game in the way that they have done in the past, then I think that we still have a chance to just nick a goal and then sort of game state it ourselves. So whereas I feel with Palace, maybe it's a little bit more of a little bit more in the air, and that could be the sort of game where actually we don't really get much, and they do create a lot more with some of the players that they've got, particularly some of the individual runners that they have that could cause us problems in the man marking.
And now you've rung the game state klaxon there, John. It actually just triggered a thought in my head that I thought it might be worth just reflecting on, which isn't on the running order, so I apologise for that. So in past seasons, when Leeds have taken the lead, we've been able to hold on to the lead, and we've won the vast majority of those games. This season, we haven't really seen that happening. We've seen teams come back at us, equalise, and beat us. So I guess I just wanted to get a sense from you of how concerned you are in terms of that change in our ability to manage games out.
Yeah, Josh mentioned this yesterday when we were chatting, and I've not really given it much thought, but my sort of gut response to this is I'd like to go back and look at the games we went ahead in first last season versus the ones that we're going ahead in now, because I feel as though people are saying, oh, you know, we get a lead and we can't hold it. But then we're talking about teams like Spurs we went 1-0 up against. West Ham we went 1-0 up against. Okay, there's been games like the Leicester game where we conceded immediately straight after that. There's been the game like Newcastle, I guess, where we Norwich, where we sort of largely dominated games and then we've given goals back. But in the Norwich game, I mean, we did win that game in the end. But I think the issue is perhaps more that we are not that good this season in terms of our attacking play. And I think the issue is that we're getting goals through not good attacking and mainly through sort of Rafinha pulling something off. And okay, you may argue that is good attacking, but I guess my point is more that it's unsustainable. It's sort of not very repeatable actions. Whereas I think last season, because we were scoring goals because we were playing better. This season, we're scoring goals because we've got Rafinha, and then we've not got enough to keep that lead, which I think we maybe did a little bit more last season. I think there's also outliers last season as well in terms of all of the caveats that we've talked about with respect to no crowds and the fact that we just gone up. We spent a lot more money than everyone else in our spot in the league, and the COVID stuff with the preseason. So I think it's probably just sort of regression and us inshallahing a little bit more this season.
Sure. So let's start to think about the structure and how the Brighton game will play out. So because Leeds are so reactive in terms of formation, it can be hard to talk about our structure in the Brighton game without kind of understanding or predicting or, you know, what Brighton might do. So this season, as you talked about in your interview with Liam, they've played a 3-5-2, they've played a 4-2-3-1, they've played a 3-4-3, they've played a 3-4-1-2, and they've not always pressed high. And I guess playing the 3-4-3 and pressing high on Leeds was kind of what marked out those games against us last season. So do you expect Brighton to follow the same tactical approach they used in those games last year, or do you expect them to mix it up at all?
I think they will go 3-4-3 and adopt the same approach because of two things. One, because it worked both times. And if nothing else, okay, we've talked about how Brighton maybe didn't always create the most chances in that system, but they certainly reduced us from creating any of our own to a certain extent. And in both of those games, particularly after the first goal had been scored, we just didn't look like scoring really, on memory. The other thing is that Graham Potter was at the Spurs game where they played 3-4-3, and as I've said in a lot of our post-match coverage, so sort of got a masterclass in how not to play against Leeds in a 3-4-3, followed by a masterclass in how to play a 3-4-3 against Leeds. And Graham Potter is just too intelligent a manager to not watch that and say, right, there's clear deficiencies in the way that Leeds approach when you play in a certain way. So yeah, I don't see them changing the 3-4-3. But that said, as you've mentioned, they have tried lots of different formations this season and to fairly good effect. So
just a reminder of the way that Brighton played the press in those two games, I think might be important, because although Spurs did press us in a 3-4-3, they did it in a different way from the way Brighton did last season. So last season, I think Brighton largely played a pentagon press, as I like to call it, a pentangle press, to encircle Leeds' pivot and to try and disrupt our build-up there and to funnel us out into the wide areas and then press us quite intensely in the middle areas of the pitch, in the middle length of the pitch, in the wide areas. So I guess that's kind of what the pattern is that we'd be looking for to disrupt, isn't it, in the game, really? That's what we'd be expecting to see.
Yeah, I suppose I would expect to see a sort of high mid block from Brighton. I think when we watched Spurs, they were obviously doing a similar thing. They were trying to funnel us down into wide areas. But I think they were sitting a little bit deeper to start with, I would suggest, particularly in the first half. The second line of pressure, as I showed in the video on the Patreon, was behind the halfway lines. And they were pressing fairly aggressively when the ball went that far, but they were just allowing Leeds to progress the ball two-thirds of the pitch, basically unchallenged, really, particularly when you went through the full-back areas. And I think what we'll see with Brighton is that they will be a lot more... I think they'll be a lot more active in their pressing. So they won't be pressing high in the same way that Spurs were in the second half, because Spurs went man-for-man and as Arsenal have done before and just sort of disrupted our build-up and were able to control the ball that way. But I think Brighton will be doing the same thing they did the last few seasons, which is to allow possession, but allow possession into areas where they feel as though they can cause us problems. So they'll just feed us down into those wide areas. They'll get their fullbacks up. They'll have their outside centre backs helping out, and then they'll have their wide forwards dropping in, their central midfielders pushing out wide, and just sort of doing those sort of those sort of four player presses that they do on each side. The 3-4-3 just allows you to do that quite easily, and I just don't think there's some clips from the Spurs game where you can see. There's one that sticks in my mind, which is Phillips just unopposed as a centre-back, playing the ball basically into the final third down the right-hand side, and it just getting to Dan James, who can get 1v1 against Sergi Reguilón. No pressure whatsoever. And I don't think that Brighton will allow that. There will be pressure on the centre-backs to stop them from getting those easy balls into the channels. They will push out wide onto the full-backs when they get the ball as well. And then you'll see the wide players tracking back and helping in that press, and I think we'll see the wing backs being fairly aggressive in their pressing as well. So it will be different to the Spurs game, but it will be sort of similar in theory, because the structure and I suppose the approach in terms of the press will be similar. It will just be, I think, a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more intelligent a press.
Of course, yeah. So if Brighton do play the 3-4-3 that we expect, that means that Leeds will play a 4-4-2, as we've said many times on this podcast. And if we're a 4-4-2, John, do you expect the starting 11 to be a little bit less mad than the starting 11 at Spurs?
I expect so, because Bielsa made a big thing about playing, for example, Diego Llorente at right back, being that he wanted him up against Heung-min Son, and obviously Brighton won't be playing Heung-min Son. I think if Firpo is available from the start, then we won't see Pascal as a left back. Then you've got questions about who's going to be the two centre backs. I don't see why it wouldn't be Cooper and Llorente. So it looks as though we'll probably see, I think anyway, Pascal dropping out. In midfield, I suspect it will be Phillips plus one of Click and Forshaw. If Rafinha's back, James and Rafinha, and then if Rodrigo's back, then Rodrigo and maybe Gelhardt, and if not, maybe have to use James again as a forward and stick Harrison in as a wide player. But so I don't think it'll be hugely different, but I do think the defence will be changed up completely, pretty much.
Yeah, I probably agree that's what will happen, but Pascal potentially dropping out is a sad face moment for me, because I don't think he's done anything wrong at any time really this season. I think he's been, well, he was poor at Southampton, I will say that, but apart from that, I think he's been very solid, and I don't think he's done anything to deserve being dropped. But then again, in other senses, neither of the other players. So what can Leeds do, John, to ensure that we don't fall into those traps that we described earlier that Brighton will set for us?
I don't think there's any danger that we won't fall into those traps. I suppose the difference is going to be, will the central midfield make with Forshaw in it, assuming that Forshaw is playing, will that make much of a difference? Will we be able to get much through the middle? And you've talked already about their pentagon press, which I think for me is just, it congests the central areas and forces the ball out wide. And I think that the question is that if having someone like Forshaw in the team, whether or not that will make much of a difference. Now, it's hard to read that, because in the last few games, Forshaw has played a little bit deeper. So obviously he was playing as the pivot in the last game. He won't be, if Phillips is playing as the central midfielder, then Phillips will be playing as a pivot and Forshaw will be a little further forward. Whether or not that makes much of a difference, I don't know. And to be honest with you, when it's a two-man midfield like that, the things that Click offers, in that he's able to shuttle between the two wide areas and help him build up, that might be useful to have. Whether or not Forshaw is as good at it as Click, I don't want to say. I think that the midfield's orientation and whether or not it works out will make a difference. And the other thing I think is going to be Rafinha. Now, I said in the last podcast that Rafinha didn't play against Brighton in both of the games, but he did. But I think he played on the left-hand side in the game that he did play. So I guess I'm interested to see whether or not Rafinha can disrupt that that sort of system that they have, which causes us so many problems when, in terms of the system side of things, we like to get the ball into wide areas, do three-man build-up, and then get the ball into dangerous situations in the box. Now, if that isn't working, we've always got the opportunity that Rafinha can, inshallah, and do something. So I think that will make a difference as well. So, we'll see. I think, again, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, for me, it's about whether or not I think this game will become a moments game, whether or not Brighton will take their chances and whether or not Leeds can create their moment. So I think Rafinha will be a big part of that, because literally every game this season, pretty much where we've pulled out points, it's been because Rafinha's done something.
Yeah, even in games when he's been wildly frustrating, he's always managed to have at least a couple of moments where he's created massive danger for the opposition, and that's, you know, that's why he's in the team. So that's great. Okay, where will the Brighton game be won or lost, John? I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, just reiterating what I just said, really. Whether or not Brighton can control the game and then take their chances when they come up, which isn't a given. I think that has to be said. And then if Leeds can generate moments of their own, usually through Rafinha. But yeah, I think this is a game where if we do take the lead like we did against Spurs, we'd have a much better chance of holding on to that lead. I think it's going to be a cliche that whoever scores the first goal will be in the driving seat.
Yes! Predicted. And almost word for word what that last bit was going to be. Excellent. Yeah.
I'm nothing if not predictable.
No, I think you're absolutely right, though. I think this one does fall down to who manages to grab the first goal, for sure. Okay, so I think that just about brings us to the end of the preview of those two games. John, you just want to talk a little bit about the video you made about the Spurs game?
Yeah, I just had a look at the game in terms of the two halves, looked at why things were so different across those two halves, and just mainly looked at what Spurs were doing off the ball that caused us problems in the second half, and why that then caused us problems in our out of possession structure as well. So if that sounds interesting, make sure you go across and check that video out.
And who's Hobbsy talking about this week?
I think Hobbsy's doing Mateus Klik, just having a look at the impact that he made in the game. So that should be up on Thursday. So yeah, another thing to keep an eye out for.
Excellent. And other than that, we'll be back on Sunday with a review of the Brighton match. But until then, enjoy the game and have a great week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.